I don't know whether this relates to that. It does in a sense, which is, I think, one question that people often ask, just in relation to those early days when you created the company. But you didn't rely on acres of subsidy. You created it was seen as quite a stark aesthetic, and that the ensemble was to the fore. Did that become your aesthetic because of the financial circumstances of the times, do you think? I mean,
one can never say, but I do know that when we've been, when foreign national theatres have hurled money at us to do big sets, we've always done our most stark productions. And Nick and I are very amused. Once we were asked to do a show on Broadway, and it turned out that in Nick's contract, which was never fulfilled, his fee was going to be in proportion to the size of scenery that he designed. That's phenomenal, isn't it? So we didn't do the job, but it was a fairly extraordinary contract. Anyway, I think there was a happy... I think that's something... I think I have quite a stark aesthetic, and so does Nick. I mean, I think that everything that's on the stage needs to earn its place. I hate to see actors lost in a load of scenery. Design is incredibly important, and Nick is very central in the company. He cast the production with me, and I work with the actors, but design is absolutely central, although there is very little scenery. But actually, to do very little is a lot of work, because you're paring down, thinking, is it this small element, or is it that small element that we need? Which one do we really need? But there's a huge amount of design decision in that. So although it's a very stark aesthetic and there's very little on stage, it would be quite wrong to say that there's no design. There's an enormous amount of design, but it's very, very, it is very minimal and very carefully chosen. Really, your artistic policy is the people you choose to work with. That's what I think. I think it's very... I think it's quite dangerous having putting policy before people. I've so often been, connected with foreign festivals, and people saying, Declan, what do you think? Should we have a Chekhov festival? Should we have a Three Sisters festival and get as many productions of Three Sisters as we can from around the world? I've actually had that said to me, and I said, I can't imagine anything worse than flooding whatever foreign festival is with them. Actually, what you want is the best productions of things from around the world. Theming things implies that I think it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous to put policy before people. It's very dangerous to put institutions before life. It's very dangerous to start believing in structure, because life has a habit of surprising us over and over again. And we need to be open to life surprises rather than go on with policies, bashing through policies, although life is full of surprises. We're in a war at the moment. One of the reasons this war seems to be going on and on is that, first of all, it's extraordinary what people are maintaining they're surprised by. Although many people were saying, don't be surprised by the fact that it's not easy to get in and out quite so simply as you think. But also, I find it a very strange principle that why are we so surprised that human nature is unpredictable? I mean, how many centuries needs to go by before we realise that people don't quite... So I don't mean to make it, it's very vulgar to make a connection between war and art like that, but there's... human nature is unpredictable. You can't predict where talent's going to come or where life. You can't really predict where life is going to come, and you have to be open to life where and when it comes. So, for example, if I may make a connection to a rehearsal, I always find it very funny when people say, how was it you chose to do it like that? Or how did you choose to do it like this? Or what did you precisely mean by that moment when this person did that? But actually, that's not the reality of rehearsal. Well, the reality of rehearsal is the same for me for my whole career, which is I'm in a room with people and a script, and there's a lot of death in the room, and you're waiting for a bit of life to come along, and you may organise something or suggest something or do an exercise or do a bit of a scene, and suddenly there's a bit of life. Well, no, what happens is there's a load of things that aren't really alive. We may spend a lot of time pretending they're alive, but we know in our heart of hearts they're not really alive, and then suddenly something comes alive and everybody in the room goes, oh my god, that's wonderful. They don't necessarily say that, but you can feel that, and that's what you need to be open to take, and that's how a piece of theatre for me is born. It's just a running after the bits of life that you're given. But it would be ridiculous to think that a bit of life comes and say, yes, that is a life, but it doesn't happen to coincide with my theory as to how the scene should be played. I mean, you can't... I mean, I think the thing is, you've got to be prepared to... Theory's cheap. Ideas of how to do things are cheap. You've got to be able to ditch those at all times, because where life comes from will be unexpected. And it is... and if we don't... if we're not open to that, then we will be humiliated.
People have mulled over more the reason why Cheap by Jowl went on, was put on ice than there was ever really declared from your side. People, I mean, did the suspension of Cheap by Jowl after Much Ado About Nothing, did that relate to your feeling that the unexpected was desirable? Was there a particular point where you thought we should...
Well, there are a lot of things I've been asked to do over the years that I couldn't do. One was to establish a company of Russian actors, the other was to do an academy at the RSC, the other was to do full staff at Salzburg with a Bardo, the other was to do, you know, a production of Lucide at Avignon, another was to do a ballet at the Bolshoi. I never had time to do all of those things if I've been devoting my life to Cheap by Jowl, which was a very intensive thing. So it was really to give me a breathing space. I think too, also a slight element in making sure that I wouldn't repeat myself, but I didn't. But no, I think on the whole it was just to let me do other things, and I'm very, very glad that I have done those other things, and that's great. But we only sort of went into slow motion with Cheap by Jowl. We did Homebody Kabul by Tony Kushner a couple of years ago. So, I mean, it has always been there. And I will always want to have Cheap by Jowl, because there will always be projects that I want to do that I passionately believe in, that I want to do when I want to do them, rather than... I'm able to do them. So like, I see Nonzo, I want to do Othello with Nonzo. I want to be able to do that straight away rather than stack it up and, you know, fit it into somebody else's repertoire. We've got plans. We don't know what the plays are yet, but we have another three over the next 4 years. We'll be doing three plays for Cheap by Jowl. Between 2006 and 2009, we'll be doing three plays.
Which inside are not revealed yet?
They're not revealed yet because they're not known yet. That's another important thing for Cheap by Jowl, is that very often, you know, you have to make a plan for years and years in advance, so you can sort of go off the boil by the time it happens. It's very important that we're able to... Cheap by Jowl gives us fantastic flexibility so that we can do something immediately when we want to do it, like we were able to do Homebody Kabul, bang, when it happened. To be fleet of foot is very important. It's very difficult for large institutions with permanent theatres and permanent duties and permanent responsibilities to give us that flexibility. We don't expect that, but we expect that from our own company, Cheap by Jowl, which is one of the reasons why we've always resisted settling in a theatre, although I think it's probably driven Nick mad that we've never had a theatre. I suspect partially emotionally I'd probably feel until now felt rather claustrophobic, having to sort of check in at 10 in the morning and sort of sitting down sharpening my pencils. I don't quite see me doing that or putting on a tie, but I think the touring nature of our work has allowed us to have tremendous flexibility, and that flexibility has meant that we could be very alert and attentive to artistic impulses, which we wouldn't have had if we'd had to run a building. That's basically that. So that will always be there, and that will always be the centre of my work. But then there are things like, you know, Cheap by Jowl could not organise for me to do a ballet at the Bolshoi. I mean, I needed the Bolshoi to do that. You know, nor could is it within Cheap by Jowl's power to get me to organise for me to do full staff with Bintafel and Claudio Abbado and the Berliner Philharmonic. You know, that's obviously, I need large organisations to do that, or to do a French this or a Russian that. Do you see what I mean? So, and those are very important experiences for me. But the centre of my work is still English-speaking work with Cheap by Jowl. I'm an associate director of the National, like I was under Richard Eyre. I'm now an associate director again under Nick. My first play there will in fact be a Russian play by Nikolai Erdman called The Mandate, which is a Soviet farce, believe it or not. And it is very funny, because the communists are coming and they're all pretending to be working class and pretending that getting organ grinders in and pretending they're their first cousins, because they don't want to be. It's a sort of, it's almost like a satire on street cred, if you see what I mean. So it's a very, very funny play, and a very dark, one of those fantastic things, which is a farce that's very dark. I love that. And that's my own translation. And it will open at the Cottesloe in October. But the other thing that is really exciting me is the Bolshoi, that Romeo and Juliet, which I did the Bolshoi, is going to come to Covent Garden at the end of July, and I'm very, very excited about that. And I can't believe it's happened. It's last three, you know, last week of July, Romeo and Juliet, this ballet that Mick has designed, I've directed, and Judith Greenwood has lit, will be at Covent Garden, and I feel thrilled. And somehow it always seems a bit unreal to me. It was a great, fantastic thing to do. But there we go.
Yeah. That seems, I mean, clearly another conversation altogether, but opera, ballet, these worlds are, I mean, did you feel that you're going into unknown territory in these, in some of these, taking this work?
I love to, I mean, it's fantastic to stretch yourself too. I mean, I would love to direct a horror film. That would take a year and a half out of my life to do. I'd love to do that. I'd love to do a thriller. I'd love to put on a circus. There's lots of different things that I would like to do. And I think then probably come back to my central work, which is developing acting, which I've done at my best through Cheek by Jowl, and I think also now through this group of Russian actors, which works in a very similar way to Cheek by Jowl. But I sort of see that as being the centre of my work. But if I kept doing that... But when I did the RSC Accompany at the Academy, I was so tired. It was a fantastic experience. I was knackered. I thought I was going to die afterwards. I was so tired, because I normally have a lot of young people that I train along with my work, but to have only young people. So I was just giving out all the time. It was a great thing to do. I will do it again sometime, but oh my God, it was so exhausting. So what am I trying to say? I mean, these are fantastically enriched. There are lots of things that's enriching to do once, or to do occasionally, because they do feedback into your work. It's fantastic to do a ballet because there are no words in it. And of course, well, as soon as there are no words, it becomes all about words. And then you start to think about words in a completely different way. So it's, do you know what I mean? It's not like going off on a whole new career. I mean, I may disappear again if I get asked to do a horror film. I would love to do something like that, or a thriller, or a circus, or... Do you know what I mean? I don't see why not. I wouldn't be able to do that if I had the responsibility of running a national company and having to come in and keep an audience. And I had a responsibility towards an audience, you see. I quite like being able to take these kind of sabbaticals.
Well, on the tantalising thought of you perhaps running away and actually setting up a circus,
it might be to do it once, but and then come back to do what I do.
Well, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. But thank you very much indeed, Declan Donovan.
Thank you.